Welcome to Inside Personal Growth Podcast. Deep dive with us as we unlock the secrets to personal development, empowering you to thrive. Here, growth isn't just a goal, it's a journey. Tune in, transform, and take your life to the next level by listening to just one of our podcasts. Well, welcome back to Inside Personal Growth. Joining us from Orlando, Florida, on the other end of the world here is Kevin McCarthy, a good friend I've known for many, many years. As a matter of fact, his On Purpose Person course I took and then kind of took off with it as well, teaching other people. We were just talking, it's at least 20 years ago. He has one other podcast on Inside Personal Growth. I didn't look up the year, but I'll bet you'll find out that it was about right when I started doing podcasting. Good morning to you, Kevin. How are you?
Hey, good morning. It's great to be with you. And actually, that was probably closer to at least 30 years ago.
Yeah, well, don't date me any longer. In July, I'm going to be 70, so I don't know. So I always like to look at the years as gifts, right? Because that's what they are. So today we are going to be speaking with Kevin about the Chief Leadership Officer. We also will throw in a few questions for my audience on the On Purpose Business Person. We also want to mention that onpurpose.me is a website where you can go to learn more about your own purpose if you haven't defined it yet. And there's a button there that you can push to actually go through a very short little exercise to actually come up with, they call it your 2 minute on purpose, right? It's 2 minutes.
Is that word? Two word. It takes about 3 minutes to get a 2 word purpose statement. How's that?
Yeah. Well, he's learned a lot in the 30 years because when I did it, it was 2 days. So it's come a long way. He's actually got it down with the times because no one has. They all have attention deficit disorder these days. No one would probably spend 2 days doing that. But I would like to, for our business audience, actually get into the book that we first held up, which is The Chief Leadership Officer, Increasing Wealth So Everyone Profits. And, you know, I want to, because I didn't even know about this book, Kevin, and it's been out a while. What inspired you or challenged you to challenge the traditional CEO role and propose the concept of what you're referring to as the Chief Leadership Officer? And how do you really define that? What do you define is the differences for somebody who's a Chief Leadership Officer versus a Chief Executive Officer, where you crossed it out on the book?
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's just take the last question. What's the difference? Most people, if you ask people that work in a company, would they sooner be executed or would they sooner be led? And executives execute and chief leadership officers lead. And so the idea here is one that really comes, there's a long sort of arc, if you will, in terms of some things that are going on that brought about this message. Part of this is because I've been such a pioneer in the purpose area, I recognize that, you know, if you go back 100 million, well, let's say 1,000 years, you know, when people were, well, more than that, actually, when you go back tens of thousands of years, when people were hunter-gatherers, the work of their hands was what they did. Then they got a little smarter and they learned how to, you know, corral some animals and plant some things. And it went from hunter-gatherers to sort of an agrarian society, but still it was the work of their hands. And then they got, as they, their minds began to free their hands up a little bit, we move into sort of fast forward into the Industrial Revolution, where we're now working with our hands. Today, most of us, our hand activity is this. You know, we're sitting at a keyboard. And so our minds, the knowledge age, if you will. So the logical thing is that the age beyond the knowledge age or the digital age, even the AI age, is the heart. So we've gone from our hands to our heads to our hearts. And what's happening is we're in an era where meaning and purpose are today. I mean, when I started this work 33, 34 years ago, nobody was talking about purposes, particularly as a heart issue. And so what's happened is the idea of a CEO is the Industrial Revolution inventions. There, prior to 1950, there were no CEOs, there were only presidents. And CEOs were the idea of a group of companies coming together, led by each company is led by a president, and the CEO was the person who was over these presidents or these divisions. Of course, today you have a guy driving around with an F-150 pickup truck and a bag of tools, and his card says CEO. It's kind of lost its meaning in that regard. But the fact is it's a leftover from an industrial revolutionary mindset, as are words like human resources, which is a pejorative term that looks at people as resources rather than human beings. And so what's happened is the CEO system of management has gradually dehumanized. And again, I'm a pro-business, love business, entrepreneur, so I'm not bashing business. But what happens is the system of management has so dehumanized people that corporations are having trouble hiring good people, retaining people. The sort of the chewing up and spitting up of people is really it's a high price that people are paying. And so as a result, the idea is the difference between a CEO and a CLO is that CEOs are doing business, what I call incompletely right. In other words, they're looking at the numbers, they're looking at profits, and I'm a profit guy, but profit is a byproduct of a system that is designed to produce the profits. However, that system relies upon purpose, plan, and people, processes, performance measures, and all of these things that go in. And as a result, if you take the people component and you, which is so vital to what's going on, and you diminish them, you're diminishing your profits, you're diminishing the effect of what you're doing. So a CLO does everything a CEO does, but understands or and understands the importance of the people component that we've got to take care of. We've got to do right by the people, not take care of. We've got to do right by the people.
I think he or she does it a different way. In other words, they look at people first, right, versus profits first. They're not command and control kind of people. They've moved from that. But there's this saying which has been around a long time, and this will go back to the On Purpose Business, the On Purpose Person book. The two most important days in your life are the day that you're born and the day you realize why you're here. And in essence, that second epiphany is really around our spiritual growth. When people talk about purpose, it's a very personal thing, their personal purpose. The business purpose may be a little bit different, but in essence, no, because it's also why the corporation exists. What is it that they do beyond make a widget or make an Apple Watch or whatever it might be? If you would, could you speak with us about that second question, and the, I want to call it, the spiritual element of that, because there is a spiritual element to finding your purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you do not look at it holistically in terms of mind, body, spirit, then all you're left with is what I would call a mission statement. You're doing stuff, but you're not really understanding why. And so purpose does answer this question of why do I exist? It also, and that is a spiritual question. So because it's spiritual, it makes most people in the business world uncomfortable. And so what I'm attempting to do at some level is say, go back to the spirit of the individual. But also, if you think about it, there's a term that's not used very much in business these days, but maybe when you and I were growing up, esprit de corps is the spirit of the group, the spirit of the core of people, if you will. Esprit de corps is a sort of an archaic word almost. And yet, when you look at the conversations that are going on in the big businesses that are now talking about purpose and culture, what they're really after is esprit de corps, because that is engagement. Again, another big sort of fancy word in the business, buzzwords, if you will, that Gallup made popular. Engagement is the process of creating esprit de corps. That's what they're looking for. So in the on-purpose business person, actually, I have an equation that I wrote. I wrote this first in the late 1980s, and I call it the on-purpose principle. And the on-purpose principle is simple, and that is the purpose of the person. I'll do it from the perspective of you. It's the purpose of the person aligned with the purpose of the organization. When that happens, that is where the magic is. That is where the energy is, because now you have a person who is engaged. They belong. They feel like they belong. They have a sense of personal significance, and they're making a significant contribution to the overall benefit of the organization. And
Right,
whether that's a
I remember the days, and you do as well. Richard Baird is a great friend, but he used to call it the soul of the corporation, right? In other words, he taught a whole model in many, many businesses worldwide, including the World Bank, about around looking at the sole reason of this corporation. What is the soul? Most people don't think corporations have a soul, to be honest with you. I mean, many of our listeners out there are like, oh, they're about money. All they really want to do is, I'm going to use Apple again. They're worth $2.5 trillion, right? They want to make more money. But really, they all have a soul, whether they've identified it or not, right? And that
correct.
brings me to this question. How do you envision the CLO fostering more people-centered approaches in organizations? And what are some of the strategies for transitioning from a CEO mindset to that of a chief leadership officer mindset? Because that will go along with the Chief Leadership Officer book.
Right. Well, the answer to the second question is really in the first question, which is, the question is, how do you develop this reality for people in terms of this connection? First of all, I think what we first have to recognize is, if the human being is the raw material that we're, so to speak, that you are attempting to work with within, but how do you bring them in? And so, people are complex. And today, what I believe we really have with the crises of anxiety, the crisis of confidence, the difficulties that are facing, the drug issues, all of these ultimately stem from lack of meaning. There's a common root. And so, meaning is something that everybody is looking for. So, what happens is, when companies step along and they try to provide the meaning, they are, in essence, putting themselves into a very dangerous position, if you will, because what we want is people who bring meaning to their work, so that the work is actually neutral and people bring the meaning to it. So it is a way of looking at it and saying that people are searching for meaning and to make a difference. So how do we communicate that our purpose as an organization is not just to make a widget, but it is how we are serving society? So there's a larger perspective on
When
it.
you say that, Kevin, it brings me back to, I remember in college I was a business major, and that's what I majored in, business management, and we used to do the time and motion studies and Demings, right? And I was
No, that was
thinking about
actually
Deming.
Frederick Taylor. That was actually Frederick Taylor.
You're right, Frederick Taylor, and I remember it was all about us being able to cut little areas out and watch people's movement, because all we really wanted to do was be more efficient and more productive, right? How is that whole concept around productivity now and having a humanistic approach, right, to treating people who work with you, not for you? Because before, it always used to be, you work for me, you're here 8 to 5, you produce, and you produce at the highest maximum capacity. How is all of that kind of meshed together these days? Because it seems pretty blurry, to be honest with you.
Right. No, it is, Lori. And at some level, one of the things I talk about is that a CLO is what I call a steward leader. A lot of people talk about servant leadership, but I prefer the term steward leadership. In other words, they look at it and they say, my job is to bring out the best in Greg. I have kind of come to maturity as a leader. I understand who I am, where I'm going, how I want to get there, what's important. I'm comfortable within my own skin as a leader. Now, how do I help more people do that who are similarly equipped and called for the service and the work that we need to have done within our organization? So it is requiring, frankly, maturity of, and that's not an age issue. It's a maturity of understanding of who one is. You can have it in 10-year-olds, you can have it in 100-year-olds. The fact of the matter is I find that sadly, most people resist maturity, particularly men. We men are really not good at maturing. Women, because of maybe, again, child rearing, birthing, and all of that that goes with it, they have a responsibility that comes on them, a risk factor of getting pregnant, maybe all of these sorts of things that women tend to mature much more quickly than men in terms of understanding the fullness of responsibility. Where and interestingly, if you look at most CEOs, even in today's world, they're men. And are they men who have decided to be mature, or are they just playing a game of power, which is often what you find in the CEO role? Again, I'm friends with a lot of top-level CEOs. They're good men and good women, but they tend to be not, the ones I know are they're just great people. And so in many ways, they feel a responsibility to how do I bring up other people? How do I raise up other people? So this idea of being a steward of Greg's talent and helping him to raise that up. It's not a paternal approach. It's more like a coach who's saying, how do I get the best out of this team? It's funny.
How does a CLO effectively balance, and that's where this is, because the human capital side of the balance sheet is a big side. That's what we're talking about. But balance the needs of the stakeholders, all the stakeholders, because you've got stakeholders, while driving organizational success and while keeping this, what I want to call fundamental essence of our purpose at the forefront. And sometimes making very hard decisions about which direction to guide this company. I've been on here lately with just two books recently around values. And one of the stories which is told in many of these books is the bad decisions Volkswagen made, if you remember, right? Versus the good decision that Samsung made when the phone started melting. They pulled it off the market, redesigned, and came back out again and had pre-orders that were double what the orders were before, right? So those kind of decisions to protect the public, to do what's right, versus do like in Volkswagen's case, I think they're still trying to come back from that debacle. Those are two good examples, actually, right? Of not upholding the values. And
Yes.
values lead to purpose. Right.
Yes. Well, no, actually the other way around.
Okay.
Okay. Let me, you've touched on a couple of things. First of all, let me say something. The use of human capital is another pejorative term. It's relating people to money. I
Right.
realize that at some level, productivity and all of these things, they matter. But if you call somebody human capital, how would you like, hey, Greg, it's nice to see you. You're a really nice human capital. It doesn't feel real warm and friendly, does it? And yet
No.
this is what's going on. See what I'm saying is we're looking at people as numbers. So in the CLO mindset, what you're looking at is it's a different triple bottom line than the environmentalists will use, okay? Environmentalists will talk about, the planet, but I like to look at it and say the real triple bottom line that the CLO is using is first, it's looking at we have a stewardship of the purpose of the organization, we have a stewardship of the people, and we have a stewardship of the profit of the organization. And these things are not necessarily balanced, they're integrated. It's how do we blend these things? There's a certain amount of art and science to it, but it is basically sitting there saying, at some level, I've got to make all of these things work. Now, to the idea of values and the relationship to purpose, this little character I have up here, he may be new to you, Greg. I don't know if you've seen him before, but I
No,
call him the
I remember him.
I call him the on-purpose pal. And I think what we're really getting at is the differences between purpose, vision, mission, and values here. So purpose, as you can see, is a matter of the heart, that this is why do I exist. The head is your vision. This is what's in your mind's eye. What do you see? Where am I going? It's future-oriented. The hands and feet are yellow, and that's the missions. This is what we do. And then the values reside in the throat and the gut, and the values govern our decisions, but they are informed by our purpose. And so at some level, the relationship you can see, because values are in our throat and our gut, the heart is in the middle of this. They have this wonderful combination because they tend to be the most timeless. Purpose is permanent. Values, however, can change. We as we mature and grow, we learn where purpose is like spiritual DNA. We're born with it. It's there as a human. Now, as an organization, can the purpose of the organization change? Yes, a purpose of an organization can change. Does the purpose of a person change? No, not really. It's like saying your DNA, your physical DNA, doesn't change. However, what does change is your understanding. As you mature, you start to understand. So people will, two-word purpose statements that they get from onpurpose.me is something that begins to refine over time, and it settles in. And then
Well,
once they get it tends to stay there.
don't these organizations need to go through? I'm recalling, actually, believe it or not, Michael Gelb sent me an email yesterday, and I forgot that he was co-author on the Healing Organization with Raj. And I look at this, there's so many books out there today that are around healing the organization. And when I say healing it, really doing what we're talking about here today. But in your book, you mentioned reforming in business, right? What are some of the fundamental changes you advocate for a modern organization who today is seeking to have this essence of purpose, to live that purpose and kind of, I'm going to call it, imbibe it. It's not just hung on the wall. Everybody's really living it. And I know that there's examples out there, like the young man who started Zappos. I mean, it was a great organization. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but the reality is there's lots of examples like that, and Patagonia, places like that. How do you get these companies to reform themselves or heal themselves so that they can actually see this?
Yeah, well, the reason I talk about a reformation as opposed to I'm not a revolutionary is probably the best way to describe it. I'm truly trying to work within the current business framework. Like I said, I'm a huge fan of business. I'm a fan of capitalism. I just believe that what happens is if you have people who are purely profit takers as opposed to profit makers, then they are going to do whatever they can without the ethic or the values and the purpose that we're describing. And there's a lot of ethical dilemmas that go on, particularly the larger the business gets, I think the more those ethical dilemmas begin to emerge. In mid-sized companies where the owner is ethical, that ethic tends to come from that person. So at some level, again, I'm a believer in helping people individually understand their personal purpose, their personal vision, their personal missions, and their personal values, and then saying, and then for the company to say, here's our purpose, here's our vision, here's our mission, here's our values. Do we align? And if we align, we have a great fit. If we don't align, let's talk about it. And if and because maybe I have something to learn from you and you have something to learn from me. So again, it takes a mature conversation and a willingness to be transparent about that. And then, now collectively, if we agree, I think the reasons, whether it's a Ben and Jerry's or the original Ben and Jerry's,
Right. The original. I'm glad you clarified that.
Or a Patagonia or Southwest Airlines is a company that had a great culture in terms of what they were about. And these are some of the stories that we've heard for years. Ultimately, it comes down to you have this purpose, vision, mission, and values. And what I like to do is then say to the companies, look, most people don't relate to purpose, vision, mission, values. You need to do it. And if you can help them understand it individually, then when you present your purpose, vision, mission, and values, they're like, I get it because I understand my purpose, vision, mission, and values. Therefore, when instead of it being corporate speak, it registers with me. I get what you're talking about. So I usually will say to a client of mine, look, let's do your purpose, vision, mission, and values, but let's prepare your team by having them do their purpose, vision, mission, and values. One, it's going to, it almost immediately gives an internal locus of control to the individual. Now, some people will resist that. They're not prepared for that. I get that. But many people are ready for that. They're hungry for that internal locus of control. As opposed to being outer directed, they now become more of an inner directed individual, or an upper directed is another way to think about it. And so now you can begin the alignment process of what's going on. Now, the truth is, if you were talking to a kid who played baseball, and I grew up in Pittsburgh, and the Pittsburgh Pirates were to offer him a job to come work with him, he'd be like, I'm all over it. That's great. They're looking for that alignment because they love baseball. They love this. So most people, again, the heart purpose is this heart issue. And so it's about love. And so people will gravitate towards something that they think they really love to be about doing, or an organization they would love to be a part of. Unfortunately, what will happen is a lot of times they get into it and they discover, hey, it's not as the bed of roses I thought it was going to be. And again, this is a matter of is the CLO cultivating a culture that the role is cultivating of a culture is as important as cultivating a profit.
Well, I
In
think,
fact, I would even say more important because it's the culture that produces the profit.
and pardon me, and I think as a society, you and I and everybody out there who listens to this podcast has seen the divisiveness which has occurred in this country, both politically, racially, the issues we're having across the world. It hasn't helped people come together collaboratively by any means, especially at our governmental levels. We've just seen so much divisiveness that seems like when I say nothing is getting done, but that same kind of thing can happen inside of a corporation, where you see this divisiveness where the ego is off the wall and it has to be right. And I think a chief leadership officer has to rest the ego and has to be able to be collaborative. There are certain words that we use today to do this. How do you see technology, this is where this question's going, and digital transformation influencing the role of a chief leadership officer? Because today, you said everybody's sitting there like this, right? And most of us are. Most of these corporations, there's a huge element of, whether they're in sales or marketing or they're in middle management, the way they communicate, how they communicate, all affects the culture and the mood of the organization. And it also has to be, I don't want to say, kind of coveted with this chief leadership office mindset. Everybody has to have it, not just the chief leadership, that everybody in the organization. So, what would you say about that? How's
Well,
that?
first of all, I don't believe everybody has to have it. I think the goal would be for everybody to have it. But the
Right.
reality is that if you have a core of maybe 25 to 30% of the people that have that, then they are more likely to create the culture that other people who are young or maybe young, I mean, immature in that sense, not only age-wise, who've never experienced what it's like to be in a culture like that, they're the ones that are going to catch it and then sort of go with the flow. There's a lot of people that are going to go with the flow. So you have the 20% that are positive and the 20% that are negative, and you've got the other 60% in the middle just sort of seeing which team's going to win. And so at some level, if you've got this 20% that are positive, that are about what it's about, and you say we're going to reinforce that behavior, then that's the team that's going to win. However, if you have the negative group, and I'm going to talk about the profit takers. I mean, for me, this is, it's again, it's this stewardship leadership concept that what are you stewarding in the organization? And because what you steward is what you're going to get.
Well, you mentioned a second ago that you take all the people through the on-purpose person, and I want to mention this again, onpurpose.me. So many of the individuals, I do want to let people know about this resource because it's a great resource to
Thank
come
you.
up with their purpose statement. If you would, because there may be organizations that aren't going to do this, but individuals that want to do it. This goes back to, hey, I'm going to get the On Purpose Person book, and I'm going to go to onpurpose.me, and I'm going to create my statement. That really, in of itself, if you're seeking meaning and you want to move from significance, or you want to move from, not having any significance in your life to having significance and meaning and purpose, this is a great way. Talk a little bit about that website, what I might experience as a result of going there as an individual. And then, hey, maybe even at promoting it to my CEO so that he or she would actually go there and engage with the process as well.
Yeah, the process is a pretty simple one. I mean, you go on, you purchase the tool, you get a couple of emails. The first email says you've purchased it. The second email says here's your credentials so that you can log on. Once you log on, it takes you're going in and you're presented with a series of choices, two-word purpose statements. Now, I'm about two-word purpose statements because they're memorable. They're powerful. They're again, it's like spiritual DNA, X and a Y chromosome. So you're presented with a choice of this two-word purpose statement or that two-word purpose statement. You tap if you're using your phone. I suggest people use a phone or something that they can tap on, because it just there's something about the tapping process. I don't know what it is. It's just more tactile, I think, as opposed to a click. Again, you can do it on a computer and or electronic device, but you tap on which is the most meaningful two-word purpose statement for you? Then you're presented another set of choices, then another set of choices, another set of choices. And much like a tennis tournament or a March Madness basketball event that's going on, behind the scenes, there's a tennis tournament running. So as you choose between these two, it's going to advance this one to the next round. As you choose between this, it's going to advance.
Got it.
So this process of advancement comes along, and at the end of this, you come up with a choice between the last two choices that you've made, and you're presented with your final choice. And then along with that, you're sent an email that you see it, and then you're sent an email that says, here's your two-word purpose statement. And then you receive an email, a series that helps you to better understand that, what it is you have. Purpose in general, why it's different than vision and missions. And then another thing that's included in the purchase is access to a free once a month refine your purpose statement. That's a live Zoom call that I host with anybody that's been a customer of that tool and wants to come on and talk about their two-word purpose statement, why it's fitting, why it isn't. Now, statistically, what we have, Greg, is it's amazing. Statistics show us that 8 out of 10 people rate their two-word purpose statement an 8 out of 10 or higher. And 50%, actually 52% of the people will give their two-word purpose statement a 10 out of 10. So it actually tends to be extraordinarily accurate. Now, for some people, their two-word purpose statement may be aspirational. For some people, they look at it and say, oh my gosh, that's who I was when I was a little girl. And that's who I am today, and that's what I want to do tomorrow. And it just, oh my gosh, my life, it's like the I describe it at times, it's like a lock and it's been stuck, and that last tumbler clicks and all of a sudden the door opens and it's like, that's who I am. I get it now.
It's a good way to go about it. I remember when you had the book and we were doing it, we did the playoffs too that way, except they weren't two word purpose statements. I remember mine because I still carry it today. I exist to serve, to inspire passion. And you and I had a long dialogue about the word passion and what it meant biblically. And I still say that my role in what I'm doing is always about bringing people from the darkness to the light, from understanding something. If you look at my podcast show, almost 1,100 podcasts, that's what we attempt to do, is always bring light where there might be misunderstanding or something like that. So it still fits for me, right? I know it. I can say it, right? Even though it's not two words. I'm going to go through that round and see what my two word
No.
one turns out to be.
Yeah, actually it is, because you said inspiring passion.
Right.
Okay, and by the way, it's not inspire passion, it's inspiring passion. It's an active verb. It's a gerund and an object. So the active inspiring passion, it's what you were doing, it's what you are doing, it's what you will be doing.
Right.
And for you, there's a greater meaning to that. And you can take the word passion, you can see the biblical reference to it. You can also look at it and say, Greg, you're an enthusiastic guy. I've known you a long time. You're a guy who brings enthusiasm. You light up a room in that regard. So these are the sort of things that why it's a good fit for you. And to inspire means to breathe in, to breathe in. So you are also feeding yourself with stuff that inspires you. So it's not just a matter of that you're in
Exactly.
any sense.
It's not a
So
one-way street because
it.
every podcast I do, I learn from, and all those learnings I put together when I go out to see clients. And so it becomes a true value. And speaking of value, what is that value proposition for somebody who wants to go to the website? What is the investment?
It's $20.
$20. So everybody truly who's listening here, $20 is insignificant amount of money. I'm sure you can afford it, most everyone who listens to the show. Go try it out. The other thing is, we'd get a copy of either the On Purpose Person, the On Purpose Business, or the Chief Leadership Officer. We'll put links to all three of those. Now, we talked about companies that were examples of where chief leadership is. We've mentioned many of them at this point. What are the common misconceptions or resistances you've encountered when promoting the idea of a CLO? What happens? Like, you go into a corporation, you talk to the CEO or him or her, and they're like, "Hey, Kevin, we just don't have time for this nonsense. We're too busy." What are you finding is the resistance?
Well, it really comes down to the CEO. And the truth of the matter is, I've had a lot of resistance, because what I generally find, in fact, I had a really interesting conversation about this the other day with a good friend of mine I've also known for over 30 years, who's been a fan of the On Purpose Person in my work for these many decades. And basically, we were talking about the difference between concrete thinkers and concept thinkers. And what happens is, if somebody is a concrete thinker, that means they're practical, they're in the moment, that's what they tend to see. Where a concept thinker tends to be more global in their looking, they're visionary in what's going on. So what I generally find is, those people that are concrete thinkers, it's sometimes beyond their ability to grasp what we're actually discussing today. It's just not the way they're wired, it's not the way they
Right.
see it. And so they go down their concrete path of money, 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 profit, profit, profit is sort of their triple bottom line. And what they're failing to recognize is that, because it's profit, 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 they're probably churning up people, or there's things going on within their organization that is actually diminishing their profit proposition, because they're having to overmanage the people and the business. Where the concept people that also, again, there's an integration of these things. It's not either or, it's both and. So at some level, The concept person gets the concept, but if they don't, if they're not running a good solid business, then what the heck's the point? They still both have to make a profit. Remember, profit is the byproduct of the health of the organization. So if
Right.
the organization is not healthy, you know, it can go on for quite a while. I mean, look around us. There's a lot of morbidly obese people who are actively involved in their community, working along, but we can all look at it and say they're a walking heart attack. Well, there's a lot of businesses that are walking heart attacks. They just haven't, it just hasn't hit yet. And so they're going to pay the price. They may not be paying it right now, but they will be paying the price. And that will come in the form of they're not able to compete the way that they used to be able to compete, where their momentum will finally catch up with them. They will finally run out of momentum, if you will.
That's a great way to put it. And in summing up this interview, what I'd like to do is give you one last question for our listeners, and I think a good one. And that is, what advice would you give to any aspiring leader, whatever position they're in now, but they're aspiring, who wants to adopt more people-centric approach to their leadership role? And I will add to that, is being embraced by upper management, if they're in middle management, to actually be more people-centric, to actually be more like a chief leadership officer, not as the command and control kind of thing. What advice would you have for them?
Well, first of all, do your own work. I mean, if you're not, you know, you have to look at yourself and say, okay, there's three primary competencies that one needs to have in order to really truly be a CLO. One is you better have a technical a talent. So let's just take we'll take a business like an ice cream company. How's that? If you need to, when it starts, you better make damn good ice cream, okay? So that's your technical ability, okay? Then you have a business ability, which is you better be able to account for, hire, do the things that are around business, you know, production, efficiencies, effectiveness. The third competency is the leadership competency. And then in the middle of all of that Venn diagram is purpose. So purpose is informing it all. And so what you find is that young person that says, I love to make ice cream, they're going to be attracted to this company, want to go in and involved in working with ice cream. They're going to be on the business side or the production side, the technical side. And so they sort of fall in love with it. But as they get better at their job, they say, we want to give you a raise. Now they put them into the business side, where they have a raise, they have some responsibilities, they have some duties, they have reports they have to fill out. But now they have people that report to them, so their leadership begins to grow. What you generally find is if you look at the career path of somebody, that these three bubbles with the purpose at the center, they rise and they fall over the career. But the general trend is as you grow to become a CEO slash CLO, your technical ability diminishes. It's less important that you know how to make the recipe, and it's more important that you're able to be a leader. So that these three competencies, they sort of wax and wane over one's career, with the trend towards technical business leadership. Those are the growth patterns that you want to be on.
Well, I just had Chip Connelly on here, and he just wrote a book around living in midlife, right? And I think one of the things is when he worked at Airbnb, they hired him as the elder because everybody there was in their 20s and they needed somebody. And I think a lot of people who are aging in the workplace, I want to throw this out to him. You get these concepts usually because you've had incidences in your life where you've had to actually grow yourself forcefully. Sometimes you have to grow, you have to figure it out, you have to let the ego go, and you have to go with it. I'm going to endorse this highly, the Chief Leadership
Thank
Officer
you.
book. I'm going to endorse the On Purpose Business book as well. Go out and get that. And I would say go to onpurpose.me, that little $20 tool could change your life. Kevin, it's been a pleasure having you on Inside Personal Growth today and sharing more of your insights about what is so vitally important today in the business world. And I hope everybody out there is listening, takes an opportunity to go to that website. And if you want to learn more about Kevin and his background and also his books and so on, go to Kevin, MCCARTHY. Dot com. That's MCCARTHY.com. Kevin first.
It's Kevin
Kevin.
W. Kevin W.
Oh, I forgot the W. Okay.
That's right.
We'll make sure we put the W in that as well. It's Kevin W. McCarthy.com. And I'll repeat that again, Kevin W. McCarthy. There will be a link in our blog to that as well. Kevin, thanks so much for being on Inside Personal Growth and sharing your wisdom today, and helping our people better understand the power of purpose.
Thank you, Greg. It's delightful to be with you again.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on Inside Personal Growth. We appreciate your support. And for more information about new podcasts, please go to insidepersonalgrowth.com or any of your favorite channels to listen to our podcast. Thanks again, and have a wonderful day.